Pawpaw by Lawrence Yip. It was like we'd gone through an invisible wall into another world. There was a different kind of air in Chinatown, lighter and brighter. I mean, on the north side were the American bars and joints. On the west, the mansions and hotels of Nob Hill. And on the other two sides were tall skyscrapers where insurance men or lawyers spent the day. And they were pushing all the sunshine and all the buildings of Chinatown together, like someone had taken several square miles of building and squeezed it in until people and homes were compressed into a tiny little half of a square mile. I didn't know what to make of the buildings either. They were mostly 3- and 4-story stone buildings, but some had some fancy balconies, and others had decorations on them, like curved tile roofs. One building had bright yellow balconies decorated with shiny, glazed purple dolphins. And there was a jumble of neon signs, dark now in the daytime, jammed all together. Most of the buildings, though, had some color to them, bright reds and rich golds, with some green thrown in. But it was the people there that got me. I don't think I'd ever seen so many Chinese in my life before this. Some were a rich, dark tan, while others were as pale as Caucasians. Some were short, with round faces and wide, full-lipped mouths and noses squashed flat. And others were tall, with thin faces and high cheekbones that made their eyes look like slits in a mask. Some were dressed in regular American style, while others wore padded silk jackets. All of them crowded into one tiny little patch of San Francisco. Funny, but I felt embarrassed. Up until then, I had never thought about skin colors, because in the different places where we had lived, there were just poor people, like all different colors. But now, all of a sudden, I saw all of these funny brown people running around, a lot of them gabbling away at one another. I started to roll up the car window to try to shut out the sound, and I noticed that my hand on the window handle was colored a honey kind of tan, like some of the people outside. I took my hand off the handle and stared at it. "What's the matter now?" Uncle Phil asked. We'd gotten caught in a momentary traffic snarl. I turned to see that Phil's face was brown as my hand. Phil adjusted his tie uneasily and growled, "What are you looking at?" I looked ahead, keeping my eyes on the glove compartment. My father and I had never talked much about stuff like this. I knew more about racehorses than I knew about myself. I mean, myself as a Chinese. I looked at my hands again, thinking they couldn't be my hands. And then I closed my eyes and felt their outline, noticing the tiny folds of flesh at the corners. Maybe it was because I thought of myself as an American, and all Americans were supposed to be white, like on TV or in books or in movies. But now I felt like some mad scientist had switched bodies on me, like in all those monster movies, so that I had woken up in the wrong one. Suddenly I felt like I was lost, like I was going on this trip to this place I had always heard about, and I was on the only road to that place, but the signs kept telling me I was going to some other place. When I looked in the glove compartment to check my maps, I found that I'd brought the wrong set of maps. And the road was too narrow to turn around in, and there was too much traffic anyway, so I just had to keep on going, and getting more and more lost gave me the creeps, so I kept real quiet. Phil headed up Sacramento Street, a steep, slanting street that just zoomed on and on up to the top of Nob Hill, where the rich people lived and where they had the swanky hotels. Phil turned suddenly into a little dead-end alley, wide enough for only one car. On one side was a one-story Chinese school of brick, so old and so dirty that the bricks were practically a purple color. On the other side, as we drove by, was a small parking lot with only six spaces for cars. Phil stopped the car in the middle of the alley, and I could see the rest of it was filled with apartment houses. Somewhere, someone had a window open and the radio was blaring out. I couldn't find the place where it was coming from, but I did see someone's diapers and shirts hung in the windows and on the fire escapes in one apartment. "Why do they hang their laundry in the windows?" I asked Phil. "That's what people from Hong Kong use for curtains," Phil grumbled. The sidewalk in front of the house was cracked, like someone had taken a sledgehammer to it, and there were iron gates over the lower windows. The steps up the doorway were old, worn concrete, painted red. To the left were the mailboxes, which had Chinese words for the names and had no label or had no labels at all. To the right were the doorbells to all nine apartments. Phil picked out the last and rang. He jammed his thumb down rhythmically. Three shorts, three longs, three shorts. "Why are you doing that?" I asked. "Signaling your grandmother," he grumbled. "She never answers just one buzz like any normal person, or even just three bursts. It's got to be nine buzzes in that way, or she doesn't answer the door. She says her friends know what she means." So did I. It was Morse code for SOS. The buzzer on the door sounded like an angry bee. Phil opened the door, putting his back against it and fighting against the heavy spring that tried to swing it shut. "Go on, up three flights, number nine. Remember now, you call her Pawpaw."
"What's Pawpaw?"
"Maternal grandmother. Chinese have a different word for every relationship. Like, I'm your Kao Fu, your maternal uncle. Actually, your grandmother's name is Awpaw. But when you're close to someone, you repeat the word, so it's Pawpaw."
"Well, I don't know any Chinese," I said.
Phil grunted. "You don't have to worry about talking to her. She learned pretty good English when she was a maid to some rich Americans."
"When did she do that?"
"Just after your grandfather died. I was only a baby then. But she quit once Jeannie finished high school. She got tired of leaving Chinatown." I walked into an old, dim hallway and climbed up the wooden steps. As I turned an angle on the stairs, I saw light burning fierce and bright from a window. When I came to it, I looked out at the roof of the Chinese school next door. Someone had thrown some old 45s and a pair of sneakers down there. If I were some kind of kid that felt sorry for herself, I would almost have said that was the way I felt, like some piece of old, ugly junk that was being kicked around on the discard pile. I didn't stay by the window long, though, because Phil was coming up the stairs, and I didn't want to act like the kid's story about Pawpaw had scared me. Anybody could be better than Uncle Phil and his family, I hoped. I stopped by the number nine room, afraid to knock. It could not be the right place because I could hear rock music coming through the doorway. I scratched my head and checked the numbers on the other doors on the landing. Phil was still a flight down, huffing and puffing up the steps with my duffel bag. It wasn't that heavy. Phil was just that much out of shape. "Go on, go on. Knock, you little idiot," he called up from the stairway. I shrugged. It wasn't any of my business. I knocked at the door. I heard about six bolts and locks being turned. Finally, the door swung open, and I saw a tiny, pleasant, round-faced woman smiling at me. Her cheeks were bright red. Her gray hair was all curly and frizzy around her head, and a pair of rimless, thick eyeglasses perched on her nose. She was round and plump, wearing a sweater even on this hot day like this, a pair of cotton black slacks,
and a pair of open heel, flat slippers. "Pawpaw?" I asked. "Hello, hello!" She opened her arms and gave me a big hug, almost crushing me. It was funny, but I suddenly found myself holding on to her. Underneath all the soft layers of clothing, I could feel how hard and tough she was. She patted me on the back 3 times and then left me for a moment to turn down her radio. It really was her old white beat-up radio playing rock music. "Hey, how about a hand?" Phil puffed as he finally got to the landing. Pawpaw shuffled out to the landing in her slippered feet and made shooing motions. "You can go home now. We can do all right by ourselves." Phil heaved his shoulders up and down in a great sigh and set the bag down. "Now, Mama, go on home," she said firmly. "We need time by ourselves." I saw that Phil must have had some fine speech all prepared, probably warning Pawpaw about me and warning me about ingratitude. He was not about to give up such an opportunity to make a speech. "Now, Mama, go on. You're still not too old for a swat across the backside." Phil ran his hand back and forth along the railing. "Really, Mama, you oughtn't. Go on." Pawpaw raised her hand. Phil gulped. The thought of having a former district president of the lawyers spanked by his own mother must have been too much for him. He turned around and started down the stairs. He still had to get in the last word, though. "You mind your pawpaw, young lady, you hear me?" he shouted over his shoulder. I waited till I heard the door slam. "Do you know what those buzzes stand for?" "Do you?" Her eyes crinkled up. "It stands for SOS. But where did you learn it?" "When I worked for the American lady, her boy had a toy. What do you call it?" She made a tapping motion with her finger. "Telegraph?" "Yes. It was a good joke on such a learned man. No?" Her round face split into a wide grin, and then she began to giggle, and when she put her hand over her mouth, the giggle turned into a laugh. I don't think that I had laughed in all that time since my father's accident a month ago. It was like all the laughter I hadn't been able to use came bubbling up out of some hidden well, burst out of the locks, and just came up. Both of us found ourselves slumping on the landing, leaning our heads against the banister, and laughing. Finally, Pawpaw tilted her glasses and wiped her eyes. "Phil always did have too much dignity for one person, huh?" She leaned back against the railing on the landing before the stairwell, twisting her head to look at me. "You'll go far," she nodded. "Yes, you will. Your eyebrows are beautifully curved like silkworms. That means you'll be clever. And your ears are small and close to your head and shaped in a certain way. That means you're adventurous and win much honor." "Really?" She nodded solemnly. "Didn't you know? The face is the map of the soul." Then she leaned forward and raised her glasses and pointed to the corners of her eyes, where there were 2 small hollows, just shadows, really. "You see those marks under my eyes?" "Yes," I added after a moment. "Pawpaw, those marks, they mean I have a temper." "Oh." I wondered what was to happen next. She set her glasses back on her nose. "But I will make a deal with you. I can keep my temper under control if you can do the same with your love of adventure and intelligence. You see, people, including me, don't always understand a love of adventure and intelligence. Sometimes we mistake them for troublemakers." "I'll try," I grinned. I went and got my bag then and brought it inside Pawpaw's place and looked around, trying to figure out where I'd put it. Her place wasn't more than 10 by 15 feet, and it was crowded with her stuff. Her bed was pushed lengthwise against the wall next to the doorway leading out to the landing. To the right of the door was another doorway leading to the small little cubicle of a kitchen, and next to that door was her bureau. The wall opposite the bed had her one window leading out to the fire escape and giving a view of the alley, which was so narrow that it looked like we could have shaken hands with the people in the apartment across from us. Beneath the window was a stack of newspapers for wrapping up the garbage. Next to the window was a table with a bright red and orange flower tablecloth. Pawpaw pulled aside her chair and her three-legged stool and told me to put my bag under the table. A metal cabinet and stacks of boxes covered the rest of the wall, and the next one had hooks from which coats and other stuff in plastic bags hung. In the right corner of the old bureau were some statues and an old teacup with some dirt in it and a half burnt incense stick stuck into it. The rest of the top, though, was covered with old photos in little cardboard covers. They filled the bureau top and the mirror, too, being stuck into the corners of the mirror, or actually taped onto the surface. Next to the photos were the statues. One was about 8 inches high in white porcelain of a pretty lady holding a flower and with the most patient, peaceful expression on her face. To her left was a statue of a man with a giant-sized bald head. And then there were 8 little statues, each only about 2 inches high. "Who are they?" I asked. "Oh, statues of some holy people," Pawpaw said reluctantly. There was something familiar about the last statue on Pawpaw's bureau. It was of a fat, balding god with large ears who had little children crawling over his lap and climbing up his shoulder. "Hey," I said, "is that the happy god?" Pawpaw looked puzzled. "He's not the god of happiness." "But they call him the happy god. See?" I pulled my father's little plastic charm out of my pocket and pointed to the letters on the back. "Happy God, Souvenir of Chinatown." Pawpaw didn't even try to read the lettering. Maybe my father had already shown it to her long ago. "He's not the god of happiness. He just looks happy. He's the Buddha. The Buddha who will come in the future. He's smiling because everyone will be saved by that time, and he can take a vacation. The children are holy people who become like children again." "What about the others, Pawpaw?" "I don't have words to explain," Pawpaw said curtly, like the whole thing was embarrassing her. I sat down by the table on the stool, which was painted white with red flowers. "Sure you do. I think your English is better than mine." "You don't want to know any of that stuff." With her index finger, Pawpaw rubbed hard against some spot in the tablecloth. "That stuff only for old people. If I tell you more, you'll laugh at it like all the other young people do." There was a bitter hurt and anger in her voice. I should have left her alone, I guess, but we had been getting close to one another, and suddenly I found the door between us, a door that wouldn't open. I wasn't so much curious now as I was desperate. I didn't want Pawpaw shutting me out like that. "I won't laugh, Pawpaw, honest. That's stuff only for old people who are too stupid to learn American ways," she insisted stubbornly. "Well, maybe I'm stupid, too." "No." Pawpaw pressed her lips together tightly, and I saw that no matter how much I pestered her, I wasn't going to get her to tell me any more about the statues on her bureau. We'd been getting along so great before that I was sorry I'd ever started asking questions. We both sat, each in our own thoughts, until almost apologetically, Pawpaw picked up a deck of cards from the table. Do you play cards? Some, I said, like draw poker, five-card stud, things like that. Pawpaw shuffled the cards expertly. Poker is for old men who like to sit and think too much. Now, I know a game that's for the young and quick. What's that? Slapjack. She explained that each of us took half of the deck and stacked it in front without looking at it. Then we would take turns taking the top card off and putting it down in the middle. Whenever a jack appeared, the first one to put her hand over the pile of cards got it. She then mixed the new cards with all the cards she had still had in front of her. The first one to get all the cards won the game. It would sound like an advantage was with the person who was putting out the card at the time. But she was supposed to turn up the card away from her so she couldn't see it before the other player. Pawpaw had played a lot of card games since she lived by herself, so she seemed to know when the jacks were going to come up. For a while, all you could hear was the slap, slap, slapping of cards, and sometimes our hands smacking one another trying to get the pile. And sometimes I'd have more cards, and sometimes Pawpaw would. Eventually, though, she beat me. She shuffled the deck again. "You're a pretty good player," she grudged. "Not as good as you, though." Pawpaw shuffled the cards, tapping them against the table so the cards in the pack were all even. "We used to play all the time. Your mother, Phil, everyone. We'd hold big contests and make plenty of noise. Only when Phil got older, he only wanted to play the games fancy Americans played, like, what's that word for a road that goes over the water? A bridge? Phil wanted to play bridge?" "Yes." Pawpaw put the deck on the table. I wandered over to the bed. The radio was in a little cabinet built into the headboard of the bed. I lay down on the bed and looked at the radio dial. "Do you like rock music, Pawpaw?" "It's fun to listen to," Pawpaw said. "And besides, Chinese hour is on that station every night." "Chinese hour?" "An hour of news and songs, all in Chinese." Pawpaw slipped the cards back carefully into their box. "They used to have some better shows on that station, like mystery shows." "I bet I could find some," I started to reach for the dial. "Don't lose that station." Pawpaw seemed afraid suddenly. "Don't worry, Pawpaw. I'll be able to get your station back for you." It was playing Monster Mash right then. I twisted the dial to the right, and the voices and snatches of song slid past, and then I turned the dial back to her station, where Monster Mash was still playing. "See? As long as you can get it back," Pawpaw said reluctantly. I fiddled with the dial some more until I got hold of Gunsmoke. It had gone off the air years ago, but some station was playing reruns. Pawpaw liked that, especially the deep voice of the marshal. It was good to sit there in the darkening little room, listening to Marshal Dillon inside your head and picturing him as big and tall and striding down the dusty streets of Dodge City. And I got us some other programs, too, shows that Pawpaw had never been able to listen to before. Don't get the idea that Pawpaw was stupid. She just didn't understand Americans' machines that well. She lived with them in a kind of truce, where she never asked much of them if they wouldn't ask much of her. "It's getting near 8, Pawpaw said anxiously. It was only when I got the station back for her that she began to relax. I was always so worried that I would not be able to get back to the station. I never tried to listen to others. Look what I missed.
But now you have me, Papa, I said.
Yes, Papa smiled briefly, straightening in her chair. I guess I do.